Welcome back to Shattering Myths. It's my great pleasure to welcome a gentleman I think is more important than any person alive today. The single best informed individual in the world about the religion of Islam. And the reason I call him the most important person in the world today is because Islam is making the biggest impact in the world today, albeit all negative. And there's no one that can explain the reasons that Islam is so ruthless, so violent, so deadly, so destructive as IQ al-Rasuli. He is the author of a trilogy of books on Islam called Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. You can buy them at Amazon.com. IQ, I want to share with you, first of all, welcome. And I wish to share with you some statements that were made by the head of Islam's most respected, it says seat of learning, but it's actually a religious institution, so it would be a seat of indoctrination. This is, and you're familiar with Al-Azhar University?
Yes.
All right. And you're obviously aware that there was another one of those videos that the Islamic State produced that shows them doing everything but actually killing the individual that they are being scolded for killing, the Jordanian pilot, correct?
Correct.
All right. So the world responded just like, oh, they're absolute savages. They burned a man alive. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But the head of Islam's most respected seat of, we'll put in air quotes, learning, Egypt's Al-Azhar University in Cairo, said that the militants deserve the Quranic punishment of death, crucifixion, and the chopping off of their arms for being enemies of Allah and the Prophet Muhammad. Are you aware of a Quranic verse that tells Muslims they should chop off arms and legs, which would be to mutilate somebody?
And by that, heart, I know it, but I don't know exactly which one.
Yeah, it's Quran 5:33. Yeah, Quran 5:33.
Okay, fantastic. That's 5:33. Yeah, yeah. After 5:32, which was talking about compassion and mercy. Yes.
Yeah, but and 5:32 is actually plagiarized from the Hebrew Talmud. About Cain and Abel. It's a story about Cain and Abel that was pilfered, plagiarized from the Talmud. And then he transitions, Muhammad transitions into a statement that endorses, tells his followers that they should use the torture of crucifixion and mutilation and just outright murder. Quran 5:33, right? So what this man was citing here isn't his impression, isn't some wacko's impression of Muslims ought to be crucifying people. The Quran actually tells them to do it.
Oh, not only in the Quran. It's in the Hadith also, the Sunnah of Muhammad and Ali bin Abi Talib. The burning of people was started by Ali bin Abi Talib. He burned two people. Mm-hmm. And some of the exegetes of Islam at the time, they said he shouldn't have done it because burning people is done only by Allah. But that's not true. Because when Muhammad conquered Khaybar, he got the top man there to admit or to tell him where the treasures of the community was, which he refused. So he put him in torture by igniting fire on his chest.
That's right.
So the Sunnah already proves that you can burn a man, yes.
Yeah, so this man, I actually said, where I'm going to play off what you just affirmed, is that this man says that burning people is not acceptable in Islam. Burning someone alive is not acceptable in Islam because only Allah can burn with fire.
And
excuse me for laughing, but why would you want to meet a God? Why would you want to be part of a religion where the God is authorized, where the God says, I'm going to burn you? Well, I mean, really, why would you want to be part of a religion where your God is just waiting to burn you? That's what he really wants to do.
Allah is not only burning people.
Yes.
You know very well that the tortures in Allah's hell, and Allah spends more of his time in hell watching people being tortured than anything else.
Well, that's right. In fact, the only place that Allah is ever presented in the Quran. If you read the Quran, Allah is only depicted in the Quranic hell. And in the Quranic hell, he is engaged in one act, and only one act, and that is torture. And all of the tortures that Allah is perpetrating on people in hell are all extraordinarily vivid in their depictions, but they're also just absolutely vile. For example, he pours molten pitch down the throats of individuals.
Yes.
He
burns their skin. Uh-huh. Another skin comes up to be burnt again. It's for eternity, by the way.
Yeah.
It's eternal.
Right. So 100% of depictions of Allah in the Quran show him in hell. Which, by the way, is kind of interesting because Yahweh, the one and only God, the God who inspired the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, he has a place called Sheol. And Sheol is the one place that he cannot go. It's separation from Yahweh. There are no tortures there. It's a lightless place. There are no fires. There are no tortures. And it's the one place he cannot go. So he's never depicted where Allah spends all of his time. And
never in the whole of the Bible. You're right.
Yeah,
never
right.
In the whole
never.
Of the Bible.
Never. He can't go there because it's a place of separation from him. And it's a lightless place, which means there's no fire. There's no burning. If there was fire, if there was light, he would be there. He is not there. So when this cleric said that Muslims can't burn people alive, only Allah can burn people alive. We'll deal with this. Two aspects of this. One is just laughable. Why would you want to have a religion devoted to doing the work of a God who gets his giggles burning people alive?
Because Muslims are irrational human beings. I know it sounds outrageous speaking about 1.5 billion people, but it's a fact.
It is.
There is not a single Muslim. When we can debate him regarding his belief system, can have two brain cells of logic. It is impossible.
Yeah, for example, if you read the Quran, which you and I have not only read, but put in chronological order and studied it, actually studied using the hadith, using Muhammad's life to put it into context, which is the only way to understand it, that you come to realize, and it's impossible to deny this, that Allah spends all of his time in hell. If you want to go to Allah, you're going to have to go to hell. And that in hell, Allah is personally engaged in all manner of despicable tortures, and it's repeated, 20 times, 30 times in the Quran?
More. There are 6,236 verses in the Quran. At least 109 of them talk about torture in hell, and Allah is watching.
And, well, yeah, in fact, in most cases, Allah's not just watching, he's participating. He's the,
correct.
He is the
correct.
Torturer.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, doesn't that mean that if you're a rational individual, that Allah is doing the work of and is indistinguishable from the Torah's concept of Hasatan, the adversary?
Correct.
Satan.
Allah is Satan.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
Allah is Muhammad.
That's right.
Allah was always Muhammad.
Right. And Muhammad admits that he was demon-possessed, and therefore Allah is modeled after Satan.
Absolutely. There's no question about it.
There's no question about it.
It's impossible, as you said a million times. I said it also.
Yes.
It's impossible to separate Allah from Muhammad.
Right.
Allah
and impossible.
Muhammad are repeatedly mentioned in the Quran. Associated Allah and his Rasul. Allah and his Rasul. And in the Hadith, my God, every verse in the hadith says, Muhammad wanted so and so, Allah did it. Allah is the enemy of those who are enemies to Muhammad.
Right.
Allah hates those who hate Muhammad. Why would the God of the universe be so personal?
Right. Why would the God of the universe come up with a handy surah, the 8th surah, to justify Muhammad's armed robbery of the Quraysh caravan? And why would he authorize Muhammad robbing them, killing them, mutilating them, and enslaving them if, in fact, Allah was anything other than Muhammad's alter ego?
But also, Allah shares 20% of the plunder.
Oh, of course.
Al-Khums. Al-Khums.
Muhammad, and there's no reason for the and because Muhammad
and Allah are the one
and the same. But when this Islamic cleric, and this was picked up by all the news media because they wanted to say that there is a senior Islamic individual who was condemning the burning of the Jordanian pilot, and we're going to speak about the burning of the Jordanian pilot before long, but they said that is non-Islamic behavior because only Allah can burn people alive. You know, if that is your rationale, you ought to keep your mouth shut because you have just made your God satanic.
Correct. But the media, being stupid the way they are.
Yeah, they are.
They are ignoring the fact.
Yes.
Now, this cleric is only talking about burning people, right. Not mutilating them, not right. Butchering them, enslaving them, and not raping them.
Oh, actually, he says that Islam prohibits the mutilation of bodies, even in war, and yet he cited the response that should be perpetrated on these jihadists, that they should be mutilated, which is they should have arms and legs cut off. If you cut off someone's arms and legs, what are you doing?
Yeah, but maybe he was saying that they were not mutilated after they were dead. But that's not true. Because in the Battle of Badr, that is exactly what Muhammad did.
Well, of course.
He mutilated the bodies of the dead.
Muhammad personally mutilated the bodies of the dead. But the Quran 533 that says cut off an arm and a leg, that when you're doing that, you're mutilating the bodies of the living. All right. By the way, since the Quran regularly tells Muslims to smite them on their necks, that means to cut off their heads, would you consider a body mutilated if the head was severed from the body?
Yes, of course you're mutilated. The minute you cut any part of a body, you're mutilating it, obviously.
So here's the greatest scholar in Islam, the grand sheikh of their most important religious university, and he's saying that mutilation is not acceptable in Islam, and yet he's telling the world that the proper response to the Islamic jihadist ISIS is to mutilate them.
Yeah, well, that's Islam. Contradiction after contradiction.
Yeah. We're going to return with IQ Al-Rasuli, and we're laughing at how stupid the religion is. Welcome back to Shattering Message. It is the troubling IQ. It's laughable, really, that here you have a journalist that obviously graduated from college, that is literate, and yet they were incapable of commenting on this. And this journalist was willing to comment because the journalist talks about capital punishment is used in the Muslim world and describes what it's used for and what it's not used for. And, of course, they're wrong, but they're willing to express their opinion. And yet they have no opinion when the highest-ranking Muslim says that, in fact, he says, mutilation is prohibited in Islam, even prohibited at times of war, and yet the Quran routinely tells Muslims to decapitate and to cut off arms and legs.
To be fair, our listeners must get the correct verses. I'll repeat them to you. Muhammad, chapter 47, verse 4.
Mm-hmm.
The Quran says, therefore, when you Muslims meet the unbelievers, kuffar, chop off their necks. The very verse that ISIS, Hamas, Boko Haram, and all so-called believing Muslims agree. And they try to fulfill. The next one is very interesting.
Okay. By the way, that you were reading right from the Quran, right? 47th chapter of the Quran, correct?
I'm giving you chapter and verse.
Yeah, okay. That's right from the Quran.
Al-Anfal, which is the plunder, the booty chapter. Chapter 8, verse 12. This is remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
It says, remember thy Lord inspired the angels that I am with you, that is Allah is with them.
Yeah.
Give firmness to the believers. I will instill terror in the hearts of the unbelievers, kuffar. And then continues, smite ye above their necks and smite all their fingertips off. Which means, after cutting off the necks of the people, they're cutting off the fingertips. That means they are mutilating them.
Right.
Yep. It's in the Quran.
And this guy quoted Quran 533.
Yep.
Yeah, why don't you read Quran 533 for our listeners, speaking of mutilation?
few seconds just to make sure, because I don't want to wait.
Yeah, they always truncate it, by the way, because they recognize that 532 was plagiarized from the rabbinic Talmud. So 533 begins with a reference to the people of the book, because 532 was in reference to them. And in terms of this, the whole concept, if you kill one individual, it's like you've killed all mankind. That's a quote from the Talmud. And it's, by the way, not for Muslims. It's instruction for, according to the Quran, for Jews. It's Muslims can kill anybody. They can kill all mankind, and that's just okay with Allah. So 533, my friend.
Al-Ma'idah, chapter 5, verse 33 says, the punishment of those who wage war against Allah and His Messenger Muhammad and strive with might and main for mischief throughout the land is execution or crucifixion or the cutting off of hands and feet from opposite sides. It's there in the Quran.
Would you consider that mutilation?
I mean, by any standard of logic, if there is any logic, Islam doesn't have logic.
Right.
But
so here's this
of logic,
this,
that it is mutilation.
Of course. So here's this grand sheikh of the primary center of Islamic indoctrination telling this journalist, quote, it is improper, impermissible to mutilate an Islam. And he quotes the very passage that he wants done to those who burn the pilot. He wants them mutilated.
Yep.
And he cites the Quran, his authorization to mutilate, but he says mutilation is not authorized in Islam.
Yes, but you see, he was talking to newsmen, and most newsmen, 99.99% of them, are stupid.
They're irrational.
They never contradict a Muslim.
Right. By the way,
they would
go
against a Christian, they would go against a Jew, they would go against a Buddhist, but they would never go against a Muslim.
Yeah, part of that is because of political correctness. Political correctness makes someone stupid. It is just, it's the religion of absolute buffoonery. Now, the next part of this that is so interesting is that there's a second aspect of the fire. That that only Allah can burn by fire. We've made a mockery of that. But Muhammad actually established Islamic tradition by burning people alive. And matter of fact, you cited one of the two where he took the leader of the Khaybar community and he burned him alive to be able to more effectively rob the community. That was a really moral reason, wasn't it? And that's what the Islamic Hadith plainly says about Khaybar. And every Muslim knows the story of Khaybar. And they know Muhammad burned the man alive. But what does the Hadith say about Muslims who miss the call to prayer? What did Muhammad say?
To burn their homes.
You're right.
To burn their homes.
With them inside.
And burn them inside if they are still there.
Absolutely. And so anything Muhammad asked to have done, anything Muhammad does, isn't that acceptable in Islam?
Of course, 100%.
Yeah, there we go. We'll be back after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with IQ Rasuli about the absurd contradictions that are in Islam. The next thing that this cleric said, IQ, was that Islam prohibits taking of an innocent life. Where in the Quran does it say that?
It says, but what they mean by innocent life is the innocence of a Muslim, not of a kafir, not of an infidel, not of a non-Muslim.
Right. So in other words, if you are not a Muslim, or your Islam is different than the Islam of somebody that is armed to the teeth, you would be considered guilty and not innocent. So they can take the life of anybody who is in any way different than them.
Absolutely, that's what ISIS is doing. By the way, with all due respect, our listeners need information. Right. I can give you now, literally now, 10 separate hadiths from Bukhari, from Majah, from Muslim hadith. All three of them will say that Muhammad said, those people who do not come to the call of the prayer, go to their homes and burn them down.
Yeah. But with, by the way, they're in their homes. Burn them alive in their homes. Absolutely. Yeah. And anything that Muhammad said and did becomes Islamic law. It becomes the Sunnah.
Yeah.
It's the Sharia. It's the basis of Islam. So this man was obviously lying through his teeth, which is what religious clerics do in general, but particularly Muslims. But where does the Quran ever say you cannot take an innocent life?
It doesn't.
And now, so let's look at Muhammad's example. When he murdered the merchants that were that he robbed on the in Badr, when he did that, were those merchants guilty of anything?
None.
Or were they just innocent civilians?
They were innocent civilians who were running a business, who were trying to get a good livelihood. Mm-hmm. He cheated them. Well, he robbed their life.
Right.
Or rob them of their life.
Right. And rob them of their possessions.
Correct.
Not that, yes, exactly. And of the 75 terrorist raids that Muhammad inspired and led during the first 10 years of the Islamic era, as they documented in the oldest Islamic books, did he ever attack an army that had attacked him?
Let's then be put it another way.
Okay.
Was he ever defending himself? Never.
Not once
in all the so-called wars that he committed was Islam defending itself.
Right.
In every single case, it's called al-Maghazi, which means in ambush.
Right.
They ambushed people who were not expecting to be ambushed.
So 100% of Muhammad's killings, and he was a mass murderer, 100% of Muhammad's killings, he killed innocent civilians.
Only civilians,
and only people innocent of any crime.
Correct. That's exactly what ISIS has been doing. That is exactly what Islam has been doing for 1,400 years.
So, rather than Islam prohibiting the taking of innocent life, that's all Muhammad did. In fact, in the first 10 years of the Islamic era, there really isn't anything that Muhammad did except take innocent life, rape innocent people, and steal the property from innocent civilians.
Yes, and rape them, murder them, pillage them, and enslave them.
Right.
But what can I tell you?
Yes.
And it's all in the Hadith. It's all in the Quran. Anybody who wants to have a bit of information, we said it many times. Read chapters 1 to 9. Okay, you want to dismiss number 1. Doesn't matter. 1 to 9.
Right.
That's all you have to do.
Right. Absolutely. And what you find is that you know, the West wants Muslims to condemn hideous acts. And witnessing a staged event where a soldier is in a cage and burned alive is a repulsive a staged event. And they want Muslims to renounce it. And so when a Muslim renounces it, this is the most respected scholar of Islam, the Grand Sheikh of their most prestigious is religious university, and everything the man said was not only untrue, but laughable.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's the reason why Muslims don't try to jump in and repudiate hideous behavior, is because when they do, they make a fool of themselves. And yet, how many people do you think in the world today were able to look at what this man said and mock all of it?
0.01% of humanity.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
I mean, all those so-called reporters, all they have to do, literally all they have to do, is read your book or part of your book. It's free of charge.
Right, true.
Or read my book and my comments, and they are free of charge.
That's
and they are literally littered and littered with information, with references, with chapter and verse.
Right. And neither of our books are written based upon any spurious material. They're not written on some odd source that we didn't cherry pick the worst out of a wonderful lot of religious material. Both of our books are absolutely comprehensive, and the material in them, they're based entirely on the five oldest books in Islam, the five most respected books in Islam, the History of Islam by Tabari, the the biography of Muhammad by Ibn Ishaq, the two most reported hadith collections by Bukhari and Muslim, and the Quran. And that's it.
And each and every one of them give you the picture of the most despicable human being that ever existed on the face of the earth, called Muhammad bin Abdullah.
Yeah. And a despicable wannabe God that is modeled after the same despicable perverted individual.
By the way, exactly what it is.
Can I would ask you a question. Apart from those five sources, if you didn't have those five sources, would Allah be knowable? Would Islam be a religion? Is there any way to know anything about Muhammad and Islam that isn't in those five sources?
None. They don't exist.
Yeah. Islam ceases to exist as a religion. Muhammad ceases to exist as an individual. Allah ceases to exist as a God. All of it fades away. If you don't have those five sources, there's nothing left.
But there is nothing left. Right. Only these five sources. Right. There's nothing left.
Is it possible for Islam and Muhammad and Allah to be any different than these five sources present him?
No way. Despicable, disgusting, deplorable, evil. I mean, literally the most how many adjectives can you have in the English language to describe somebody who is beneath contempt?
You know, I spent years of my life coming to understand the Quran by studying the two chronological hadith collections. One, the history of Islam's formation by Tabari, the other one, the biography of Muhammad by Ibn Ishaq, and then putting the Quran systematically in chronological order based upon the context of Muhammad's life as it was provided by those most respected sources. And I want to tell you, every day that I invested in it, I felt filthy. It was like a journey into hell every day. It's so repulsive. And I don't think there's any way to be exposed to this material, if you're a moral, thoughtful individual, and not be absolutely repulsed.
This is why I said, if somebody reads the first nine chapters
and
does not come to our conclusion, he should be put in a mental asylum.
Yeah. Yeah, you're immoral. You're incapable of exercising good judgment if you can't come to that conclusion.
And we're talking about nine chapters. We're not talking about 200 books. We're not talking 30 years of research or 10 years of research. No. Maybe 2.5 hours to 3 hours maximum of reading.
Right. Now, the point that I was trying to make these last few days is that the West has absolutely no justification in renouncing the burning of the Jordanian pilot, if that's indeed what occurred, because it doesn't actually show him burning. It shows an event that's staged. And the reason that the West has no justification in renouncing it is because we caused it. When the United States started bombing your country, Iraq, how many people do you think they buried alive and burned alive in the shock and awe on the first attack of Iraq and then later with the invasion of Iraq? With all those bombings, how many people do you think they burned alive and buried alive?
Tens of thousands, obviously.
Yeah, tens of thousands. So here, these Muslim jihadists are killing by burning alive a captive individual who actually bombed them. And he was returning from having bombed them, and they respond in kind. Were there any Iraqis that buried Americans alive or that burned Americans alive? No.
Not as far as I know.
No. And so all the people, the tens of thousands that America buried alive and burned alive in the bombing, the tens of thousands, were they innocent individuals?
Except if they were fighters, they were innocent.
Yeah. They were civilians. All of them were civilians.
Yeah, I mean, that's war. In war, more civilians are dead than the warriors.
Yes, but what justification did America have for declaring war on Saddam Hussein and Iraq?
But it wasn't only America.
Okay, but what justification did the world have to start bombing and invading Iraq?
whatever reason they've done it, they have done it. The important thing is now, what do we do now?
But having done it and having buried and burned alive tens of thousands, and the number is actually in the hundreds of thousands of Iraqis, why is the world so horrified that one actual combatant was burned alive when the very countries that are bemoaning it buried hundreds of thousands alive and burned them alive?
It's, I don't know, duplicity.
Yeah, total hypocrisy. And by the way, what was the Jordanian response when they said, you know, this was not Islamic to burn a military combatant alive? Didn't the Jordanians almost to a person say, we're going to increase our bombings of Syria, and that we're going to burn them alive? We're going to do to them what they, by the thousands, what they did to this one soldier?
Correct.
Isn't that? They've already begun. Isn't that completely hypocritical?
Well, not from the point of view of the Muslim.
How can you denounce an act that you yourself are saying that we have done and we're going to continue to do?
I don't know.
Pretty stupid. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with IQ, our Sulu, foremost expert on Islam. This article that I have referenced quotes another cleric, another highly esteemed cleric. It says, while acknowledging the prophet's saying, by the way, Muhammad wasn't a prophet because he never predicted anything accurately, while acknowledging the prophet's saying that God alone punishes by fire, Bin Mahud cited a Quranic verse that requires Muslims to punish their enemies in kind. Since the U.S.-led airstrikes burn Muslims, he argued, the Islamic State group must burn those behind the attacks. The reason I cite this is that since Muhammad did say that Allah alone burns by fire, since Muhammad burned a man alive to elicit information on buried treasure, and since he ordered Muslims to burn Muslims alive in their homes, wouldn't that not make Muhammad Allah?
Of course. Muhammad and Allah were always one and the same.
Right.
Even so in the most...
Right. If only Allah can burn alive by burn by fire, and Muhammad is cited burning by fire, that makes...
They're equal.
That makes them the same, doesn't it?
But they are the same.
Yeah.
I mean, you know that, and I know that. They are the same.
Right.
Nothing in the Quran was revealed to Muhammad by a God called Allah. Why?
No.
Muhammad revealed everything in the name of Allah.
Right. And by the way, wasn't Allah one of the rock gods of the pagan Quraysh, one of some 365 rock gods of the...
Yes, but he was not just an ordinary one. He was the supreme god of 360 gods and goddesses.
Right. And that was only because his rock was the largest.
Correct.
By the way, what color was his rock?
Blackstone.
Yeah, Blackstone. So he's the supreme god because he was the biggest he was the biggest rock in the rock pile called the Kaaba. But does choosing one god out of a rock pile of 365 gods make a religion monotheistic?
No.
No.
But according to Islam, they are monotheistic.
Okay.
You know something? Yes. The Muslims, when they shout Allahu Akbar, the Europeans translated Allah is great. That's not true. Akbar in Arabic means bigger.
Right.
Bigger.
Right. Bigger.
I mean, so important because we just discussed it now.
Bigger,
all Allah was the biggest of all of the stones.
That's true.
So Allah, Akbar is always bigger.
Yeah, that's
funny. For example, in Arabic, you've got a family.
Yes.
And the eldest son is called Akbar, the Akbar son.
Right.
So Akbar is not great, is not the greatest, means bigger.
Yeah, and that is true. Allah is simply the largest black stone in the stone pile. We have Glenn with us who has a question or comment for you. IQ, go ahead, Glenn.
Good morning, Alec. Good morning, IQ.
Good morning,
Hugh. I just had a few minutes to tune in here. I know we're wrapping up. The duplicity and the hypocrisy of America is facilitated by standoff weaponry. The fact that we do everything with drones and jets and everything. Things launch, and then the carnage on the ground is never observed, filmed, exposed to the...
Right,
And so we burn up thousands, And they kill one up close and personal. There's a famous movie called from 1954 called The Bridges of Toko Reek.
Right.
With William Holden, Grace Kelly, Mickey Rooney, and a couple Korean War era pilots. You know, pilots flying off an aircraft carrier and stuff, and William Holden gets shot down.
Mm-hmm.
And Mickey Rooney ends up coming in with a helicopter crew to try and rescue him and that sort of thing. And the whole drama is built around, you know, his personality. We get acquainted with the characters, and then we see him tragically lost at the end. And we're all identifying with the down jet pilot and the down helicopter pilot, but not with the people who suffer from the carnage from that's brought on them from the air by the plane.
Your point is brilliant. What he's saying, IQ, is what I mentioned earlier, that America and the Western allies have killed tens of thousands and actually hundreds of thousands, burning them alive, but in remote control without pictures. And we're not considered savages, and yet the Muslims burn one of the belligerents alive, and they are considered savages. Now, clearly the Muslims are savages, but doesn't that make the West far worse?
I'm glad your conclusion is correct. They are savages.
Yes.
Irrespective of anything else, they are the most savage group of people on the planet.
Well, you'd have to challenge that, as it relates to burning people alive, people who are pinned down and burnt alive, the United States has done more of that than any other nation in the world. So if this is the litmus test for savage, what did the United States do to Hamburg, Germany? What did we do to 50 Japanese cities? We firebombed them. We burned people alive. We buried them alive, and then we burned them alive. So, yeah, Islam is rotten to the core. But maybe the reason that we're unable to deal with Islam is so are we. IQ, you are not. You are a voice of reason in a sea that is polluted. And I thank you very much for being part of the program.
Thank you.
Thank you, Glenn, also for your comments.